Welcome to The Age Stage. In this, our fourth episode for the year, my name is Vicky Barber, and behind the controls we have Brody Guzet.
Howdy doody.
How are you, Brody?
Look, I'm fit as a mallee ball.
Oh, that's good.
I am, except that I've been having some rather peculiar dreams.
Oh.
Do you dream much?
Yes, I do. Sometimes they can be quite confronting, can't they?
Well,
I'm not a dream analyst, by the way.
Being an older type person, you have to get up rather frequently.
In the evening. Oh, during the night.
Yes, during the night. Yes. And it's during those moments like that, and I suddenly wake up and I'm in the middle of a dream and I think, oh, I hope I can go back into that one.
Do you then go back?
Well,
because I think if you tell yourself you do, I've
sometimes it depends how quickly you fall off.
Back
to sleep again.
Yes.
But they're rather strange. It must be that I've been reducing my alcohol intake because I've been listening to people about staying healthy as an elderly person.
Very good.
So I'm now not drinking with my meal.
Oh, right. You just drink every other time during the day.
Yeah.
So three times a day, you're not having one.
I have one after. No. What I'm finding is that I'm not drinking hardly any wine at all, so I might have probably usually nothing now before dinner.
Oh, very
but
good.
I'll have a whiskey afterwards.
Oh, I always have a G&T usually. Yeah, I'm not a wine lady. White wine anyway.
Anyway, how was your week? Was it good?
My week has been good.
Yes. And the boys are well?
The boys are always well, which is good.
Now, who have we got on the show this week?
Well, we have our esteemed panel with us this week, and that's Stuart Shaw, back after an absence.
He's alive.
Yes, he is alive, so that's why we've brought him back. And also Peter Nilsson will be with us. So they'll be talking about living with carers and, caring for the elderly,
yep,
et cetera.
What the carer's job is?
What their job is and, how to go about getting a carer, et cetera. And even within a retirement village. So we'll look into that. And then on the half hour, we'll have Mark Payton, and he's from the Fresh Food Program.
Oh, I've heard of this.
Oh, have you?
Mm, I have.
And it's currently running from the Southern Peninsula Community and Information Support Centre, and he's going to guide us through health and nutrition, but also the challenges of food insecurity, which I'll find very interesting. And then after him, we will have a second studio guest by the name of Malcolm Daff, and he lives here in Mornington, and he's part of the local community organisation called Peninsula Voice, and he'll talk to us about that.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
In which case, we now have to go.
We now have to bring in
the magic moment to bring in the deadly duo.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now.
Wrong one.
Will you still be sending me?
Sorry about that, gentlemen.
Incorrect.
My fault. Entirely my fault. Played the wrong piece of music, but you don't mind, do you?
No,
of course you don't.
Hi, Brody.
Hello, Stuart. How are you? Welcome back.
Very good to see you on your pen.
Yes, I'm this side of the dirt, so that's always important. it's one of life's great joys when you can wake up each morning, come down here and have a bit of fun. And
I think I'll have that tattooed on my back. One of great joys to wake up in the morning.
I like the one about being on this side of the dirt. I haven't heard that one before.
Jeff Kennett actually always had a very good philosophy on life, because he was down in Frankston many years ago after he ceased being Premier. And I asked him at that time, I presume being Premier was the best time of your life. And he says, not at all. The best time of my life is tomorrow when I wake up and I can do something with the day.
Oh,
and I thought, what a great philosophy.
That is a great philosophy.
That's a good attitude.
And that it keeps getting better.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can never go back and change the past.
No.
But
no.
You can do something really positive with tomorrow.
And you've been doing something really positive, because we should put a little bit of a plug in here. We've just been looking at your big advertising spread.
Yes.
That's very exotic.
Yes, it's very flexy, isn't it?
Mm.
It's very impressive.
Very flexy. How's it working for you? It's good?
So far, so good. Yes, it's very early days with our new business called FlexiCare.
Yep.
Home care packages. But, we're very optimistic. And really it comes from managing the village for the last 40 years. As our cohort age, they need more care. Mm. And home care packages is a really big part of that.
So you're looking after your own interests, are you, Peter?
Absolutely.
You know when you get a package.
Yes. I'm sorry, I'm going to butt in here because I don't know of anyone that would come into a studio with half an hour's opportunity to completely brain us with everything that's so good about his world.
Yeah, that's why.
And he never does. He's so polite and he's a real gentleman. He doesn't take more than his due. And for that, we're very grateful, and to bring in your collective intellectual capabilities. And today we're talking
about.
we're just being nice. Just really, mainly because I played the wrong
tune. It's over. That's it for today, Peter.
Run out of nice things to say now. Now, living with carers.
Yes, good title.
It's probably not the easiest of move in a person's life to have a carer, even if they have to acknowledge that it's one of their own, so a family member.
Mm.
What about the carer system? It's growing. It's a huge growth industry, isn't it?
Well, I think, Stuart, there's a fair bit of stats on the federal sphere about how much carers save all of us, taxpayers.
Right.
With regards
to... Yeah, but basically family members.
Yes.
You know, when you look at volunteers and just for general care in community, it does start at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if something happens to mum or dad, you are going to render care and support to them.
Of course.
But don't forget caring being grandmothers for grandchildren.
Yes.
It starts there, doesn't it?
Mm.
Yep. It so does. You're babysitting, you're letting the parents go to work.
Absolutely.
So carers can be any age and for people of any age. And that's by far the greatest system of carers that we have in the country.
And it really goes back to volunteers, doesn't it?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it all stems from that pathway. Yeah.
Mind you, there are medicinal or
I thought you'd given up the alcohol before dinner.
Will you take over from here?
No. You put your own foot in there, Brody.
I did. But the medicinal carer, the one that has to...
caring for their partner.
That's when it starts to get tricky, I would think.
And I don't know, I'm sure the same's in Stuart's village. From our point of view as the owners and managers of the village, we have a lot of people who are carers for their partner, and we focus all our efforts on that carer, not on the person being cared for. Because whilst the carer has their health, it all works beautifully. So once the carer's health suffers, doesn't it, Stuart, we then see the wheels fall off. Yeah,
and that's been recognised through the Commonwealth Services for many years when they established daycares for adult support programs.
So that people can have rest, or carers can have rest.
Carers can have a day off, you know, that we would, I mean, we have a day centre.
Yes, we do.
And Peter has a day centre. So we take care of the person in need of care. You can go off, go shopping, go to the movies, do something.
Just stay at home, do nothing.
Yeah, to recharge your battery so you can then continue your role as a carer for a longer period of time. And, you know, whilst that's a little self-serving from a government perspective, it's a really good program to... because parents, I mean, you know, spouses would generally want to care for each other when the time comes. And if you can facilitate that either 1, 2 days, 3 days a week with respite thrown in there, because some of the caring roles can be particularly challenging.
I can imagine that could be quite emotionally and physically taxing as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And certainly from our cohort, the generation of people in villages, they are, shall we say, very stoic, Stuart.
They are of that
and
generation.
And very private. So it takes a bit to get them to open up and to let us get involved in giving them a day off. Mm. And sometimes a disaster is what happens, is the carer gets sent to hospital.
Yes.
And then it becomes obvious that the cared for poor person really, there's a lot of need.
Mm.
And when they come back from hospital, we then talk to them and say, really, we're here to help.
And that's no different to wherever you choose to call home, be it a village,
but
in the community.
Yes.
If something happens to your carer, there's a crisis.
Mm.
You know, if you're a family carer, and how organisations respond to that, or how people respond, that, you know, if the rest of your family is somewhat remote from you, who's going to actually come and support a person in need of care at that time.
Right.
You know, your family might be interstate.
Mm.
You've been taken to hospital. Your husband, you know, needs someone to come and look after. How long is it going to take them to come down, and what are you going to do about it?
Mm.
And that is always a challenge. And that's the same in a village. We may not know that someone is looking after another person. Then the carer goes down, has a trip, breaks a leg, whatever it might be. Then all of a sudden, there's a person that needs to be looked after.
Mm.
Villages generally do that well because they have some facilities on site and staffing on site that can enable a temporary situation to be accommodated, generally. You know, some places might struggle to do it. In Peter's village, I mean, with a day centre or with overnight respite services, which is the same as us and many other organisations of our size, you can step into that breach at that time. Even if it's only short term, while family members still come down to the rescue and then take over the care, take the person back home, or in longer term issues.
So we've had quite a few occasions where that exact circumstance happens and the nurse on duty at 3 a.m. discovers there's a person totally at risk at home because you sent the carer to hospital. So we, as does Stuart and villages which cohabit with aged care, we have emergency respite beds, and the rules basically are for 48 hours, giving the family, if they're interstate, time to catch up. We will take the person being cared for. We don't talk about money. It's just, here we are. They ring the nurse on duty in the aged care. We've got someone, and they come in for that time, and they're safe. And of course, the one who's their carer has comfort in knowing that their partner is safe.
Is being looked after.
Is being looked after. Yeah.
The corollary, of course, is the person that lives by themselves, be it in a village or elsewhere.
Mm.
You know, if something happens to them, actually being aware that there's something that's happened to your neighbour, or neighbour being village or in the community, is a really important process to try and set up. I know with our neighbour, John is 92 and becoming a bit frail, and you know, so we would always keep an eye on the property to make certain that, okay, John's car's moved or whatever it may
yes,
be.
Yes, has he pulled up the blind today?
Exactly.
Or, yes.
And that happens in villages, so that you always try and get an early alert system to say that someone might need help.
Mm-hmm.
And so, they're really good systems. But in terms of the carer specifically, you know, it is a very challenging role because you will be asked to do things that you never expected to do for your spouse or your child to do for you. And that is an educational experience.
Can be confronting.
It can be very confronting. I know when Dad he had his stroke, and people were sort of moving him about and, you know, putting his bed swings and all the rest of it, and it just looked so awful, you know, and I knew, I mean, I would have done it, but it was obviously in hospital, so I didn't need to. But on that point, coming back to, we've referred to your family carer, but then it gets to the stage when you then actually need an employee carer, for want of a better description. How do you get assessed to A, whether you need an external carer or not? Is that a government?
Well, there's three options.
Yep.
You might simply, your son or daughter might decide, Brody, you need a care. So we'll ring up Dawn's cleaning service.
Jim's mowing.
Jim's mowing, yes. Plug for Jim's, plug for Dawn, if Dawn actually exists with a cleaning service. And if Dawn does exist, just money's in the mail. Thank you. A. Robinson Drive.
The Brody and Vicky cleaning.
Yeah, the Brody. so that again is probably the simplest way to get care. Because of those tasks.
Care.
Yep. You might say you just need someone to do the washing once a week. So you identify what tasks that mum or dad or whoever might be struggling to do. Okay, how are we going to get that done? So that's by far the simplest way.
Is there financial support then?
No, there's not.
Sorry.
Okay, then councils would be the secondary most common forms of care.
Right.
Through, and that generally comes through some form of referral service. Now, that's in a state of flux because a lot of the council services are now being morphed into the Commonwealth's home care program.
Right.
So, you know, that then brings them under the same umbrella as any community care program throughout the funded support network. So there will be an assessment, and at some point the assessor will say, yes, you will be eligible to receive care at level 1, 2, 3, 4, or residential care if the need is assessed to be much greater. That will then be put into a government computer program called My Age Care.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point you'll be advised that you can now get care.
Right.
Time may have elapsed. You might need an interim solution for that.
And can that care be along the lines of what you just said? It might mean that it might be that you do need a cleaner or you do need the maintenance around the yard, etc. Does it cover for that, or is it more so like the individual needs help with bathing and cooking and things? I would imagine there's a variety.
The goal is always to try and maintain you in your home.
Right.
So you might need help doing household chores, which will prolong your ability to live at home properly. That is an available service. Same as personal care. Realistically, any care that will keep you at home longer is the goal of a government. Delay admission to residential care,
mm-hmm.
and equally to delay your dependency accelerating. So the goal is to try and keep you independent in your familiar environment.
Right.
Now, at some point in the program, some programs will be cheaper to do it yourselves and not actually get embroiled with government funding, but there will be a cut-off point whereby your level of service that you need, it is better to move into formal subsidised care in the home.
That's true. And it's of recent times, it's now becoming means-tested. So
yes,
it's really, if there's an ability to pay, the theory is you should pay or co-pay.
Mm.
Right.
Co-payment, basically.
So you mentioned a referral before, though. So say it's my parents and I think, they need care or they need even cleaning the house appropriately, trying to clean a shower or whatever it is. Do I go on to My Age Care is it a referral through a GP, or what's the process that someone would need to take in that regard? If you feel that you know of someone that needs care.
My Age Care would be...
That's the website, which is...
You need an aged care assessment.
Can you book one of those over the website, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say?
There's a 1-800 number.
Oh, okay.
Or, which is all part of My Age Care.
Right.
Or you can go on the website and just follow the prompts.
And book it in. Oh, okay.
And you can book it in that way.
Right, so it's not a referral such as your GP or anything like that. It's just someone needs to sort of nominate,
the whole system is based around privacy.
Yes.
So even though if you or someone else believes that a person needs care...
Yes.
One of the very first things that happens is they take on board what you say as a referral, and then they'll ring that person and make an appointment
to go and see them.
Mm-hmm. And if the person who they ring says that I'm fine, thanks very much, that's the end of it.
Yes.
Now
which is a weakness in.
I was
in
about
the
to say, so the person, yeah. you know, you might. Know.
And clearly, if the person has some cognitive impairment.
Yes.
Where they don't understand their circumstances, that's a major problem.
Okay.
And unfortunately, if you don't have that power of attorney or that...
There's no way to bypass that, then,
well,
is there?
Well, there is. We can go to guardianship, which is an awful process.
Okay.
But that's the safety net.
Right.
Go to VCAT and guardianship.
One of the problems of the assessment process is that someone comes out to... Well, we'll pick on Brody. Since he's given up alcohol.
He's a bit twitchy.
He's a bit jumpy.
He's a bit twitchy. You know, someone comes out to assess Brody and we'll say, okay, Brody, walk across the room. Well, you'll put on your best show.
I will.
Of course.
Chest pumped out, standing erect, you know, not a problem walking.
He'll be on the catwalk.
And there'll be a whole range of questions, you know, can you cook for yourself? Yeah, absolutely, I cook my roast every night and do this, do that. And you need someone who actually knows you. So ideally your spouse will be there to say, that's not true.
He cremates the stove.
He sits in the corner. He's left the stove on 24/7. We have the fire brigade here. Mm. You know, because it's your nature to want to put on the best show possible.
Yes, no one wants to admit that they might need a little bit of help, do they?
Exactly.
So we always advise the best support. There's no substitute for family.
Yes, of course.
And clearly, in most instances, family or some members of the family are across the issues.
Yes.
Yeah. So we always recommend that the family are very much involved in the process. And when the appointment is made, we say a family member should be there.
Yes, of course.
For no other reason to observe.
Right.
To be satisfied it's a good process, but more importantly, to intercede as required.
Yes.
Hang on, Mum, that's not quite right.
Right. Yes.
But before we finish today's talk on carers, can we just touch on caring for someone with dementia?
Yes, yes.
Which by far has to be the toughest gig imaginable, to have someone who does not remember time, place, what I should be doing, how I should be dressed, and ultimately the dementia might proceed to a stage where I don't know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who are you in my house? Get out. I don't know you. You might have been married for 40 or 50 years.
Mm.
And that is a very confronting thing for a carer, particularly if it's a spouse or a son or a daughter,
of course,
to confront. We would always try and encourage people that if there's a sign of dementia, you need to start getting as much preparation done beforehand. And we would always say, you know, this is Dad's fuzzy day book. You know, start to put together a picture, a book of what was important to Dad. Here's where we married, Mum and Dad got married.
Oh, right, yes.
Here's, you know, Peter, our firstborn, and then showing various stages of life. So the person with dementia can go to the book and try and remind themselves that, oh, this is my life. Oh, you are my wife.
Yes.
Here you are, back when we first got married. And some of those things, you know, you need to start that early. So as the dementia progresses, you have more tools at your disposal to try and take the edge off, because as you dement, you might become more angry with the world because you don't remember.
Yes,
why are you feeding me? Why? I don't want that. I don't wear that, whatever it might be. And you just need to try and take the edge off those types of thing. And, you know, say caring with someone with dementia is by far the hardest and most challenging task.
So is there a support mechanism for people who are caring for those with dementia?
There is. We used to run a dementia support network down on the peninsula under the auspices of Alzheimer's Australia. We stopped doing that some years ago. I'm not exactly certain why, as it was just a good community program.
Someone forgot.
Yeah. I honestly don't know, but certainly Alzheimer's Australia are really good in linking people up with support networks.
Right.
But there's a lot of wisdom in what you've just been talking about in terms of those books. And I think that if anyone is out there, then you've got someone that's starting to have dementia signs.
Yes.
Then start the
I think what you called it a fuzzy book.
In the village of residents, which we call a carer support group.
Right.
And they get together monthly with guest speakers to talk about issues like Stuart's just raised. And a lot of the people who are members of that were carers for their partner who no longer is either part of the village or even is. And they are a great resource for other people, because I told you before, Chaz has some great sayings, and one of them is that, Peter, nothing in this world is new, it's just new to you.
Yes.
So you've got to find the people who have experienced the sorts of things you're going through.
Mm.
And can share
the journey.
Mm. A question without notice for Peter. Is that open to the broader community?
Absolutely no. But it should be.
Should be.
Absolutely should be.
I was giving you a chance to actually promote
it's
that
not yet, but with,
as a good idea.
But with FlexiCare, it will be.
Ah, there you go.
One of the things about FlexiCare that we're promoting is the Village Glen clearly is a resource within the community of Rosebud, and it's underutilised in lots of ways. So we're quite hopeful that FlexiCare will be bringing people into the village to share all the things that, that we offer. Well, there is an issue with that, if I may, just before you finish up, is clearly our residents sometimes see the world differently, don't they, Stuart?
They do.
It's their space.
But a good, it's a good community resource. And, and it is about opening up villages and other
and similar tapping into that resource.
And make it available to people.
I'm going to have to cut you off at the knees, gentlemen. I'm awfully sorry. Yet again, we get deep into the conversation. And
we love the conversations with you both.
We're out of time. But we do look forward to seeing you next week. Will you be with us?
I will be.
You will be. It's wonderful. It's two in a row.
Two weeks in a row. I know you're surprised. And I'm looking through your gnashed teeth to think, oh, really?
That's not true. You know it's not true, Pierre. Peter, it's very good to see you again.
Thank you very much.
Been
Thank
a stalwart. Been there. He's been there when...
He's like that.
He's a rock. Yeah, he is. Yeah. Fantastic. On that note, we're going to leap into a bit of music. We're going to dispatch you into the big... Actually, no, you could stay in and listen if you wanted to, but it, the rest of the stuff is going... The rest of our guests are coming today by the telephonic piece of equipment.
Yes, they are. Mm-hmm. By the dial-in.
But let's, in the meantime, have a little bit of music. And this is...
And you're with The Age Stage, and we'd like to welcome Mark Payton to the show today. Hello, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Hello, Mark. Now, you're with the Fresh Fruit Program, is that correct?
Yes, I work for the Southern Peninsula Community and Support Centre in Rosebud, and we run two fresh food programs, one in Rosebud and one in Germana, and also have a pantry 5 days a week distributing fresh food to members of our community.
So, Mark, when I first heard about chatting with you today and heard the term or read the term food insecurity, I was a little unsure what that meant. But it's obviously an issue here on the peninsula and probably broader, I'm sure. Can you just explain a little bit about what food insecurity is?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So food security or insecurity is the inability of individuals, households, communities to acquire food. It's healthy, sustainable, affordable, and that's a nationwide problem.
Right.
We see probably this figure's bandied around between 5% and 8% of Australians over the last 12 months have experienced food insecurity at one point. So you're sort of talking over 1 million people nationwide have been touched by the problem. On the Mornington Peninsula, the figures would probably be slightly higher, I would imagine, and that's probably compounded by lack of access to private and public transport, higher pockets of unemployment, so that sort of just exacerbates some of the reasons why people do experience food insecurity.
Is there a particular demographic that suffers from food insecurity more than any other?
I would say it touches all people, different ages, different cultural groups. On the peninsula, I think we have a slightly higher average age. So in some of the fresh food programs that we run, we'd see a sort of higher proportion of people, say, over 45, 50, accessing food from the program.
And you mentioned before it's, the lack of whether it's public transport or it's a financial situation as to why people can't access the food. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. There's numerous factors why people can't access fresh food, but predominantly it is financial issues. I think there's a figure stating on the Mornington Peninsula that... some people pay up to 75% of their income in private rental properties, so that doesn't leave a lot of money to pay other bills and of course, food. Yeah.
And when you say fresh food, do you mean things like vegetables or do you include things like baked beans and spaghetti into that?
When I use the term fresh food, we are talking fruit and vegetables, meat, fresh dairy products.
Yeah.
So anything perishable or required?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah, sort of with a healthy and nutritious benefit to our community members.
And where do you get the food from then? Where does it come from for you then to be able to distribute?
Yeah, the food that we distribute at the programs comes from an organisation called Second Bite. They're a food rescue organisation, and they pick up food or surplus food from supermarkets, so your Aldi's, Coles and Woolworths, farmers, distribution centres, markets, where the food is still fine to eat and be consumed, but hasn't been able to be sold or won't be able to be sold for either...
Because it doesn't meet the standard, so to speak, of the store.
Absolutely, yeah, right. That agrees. And so, I mean, you sort of wander into some of the big supermarket chains and you'll see that in their fresh food department, every apple in a certain section is exactly the same colour, same size. A lot of it comes down to aesthetics.
Right.
How is it distributed?
So once at our Rosebud and Dramana fresh food programs, the food is dropped off by Second Bite. And we have a team of wonderful volunteers who set up our two halls with trestle tables and lay out the food for our members of the community to come and access. Our volunteers sort through the food just to make sure that it's all okay and okay to eat. And then we open on both programs. Rosebud's run on Monday and Dramana's run on Wednesdays at 10:30. We open up the doors to our community members. They bring in a bag and are free to roam around and pick the fruit that they think is, well, most suitable for their needs.
All right. So you can go there at those times and actually just choose the food yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So we open up the doors. Everyone comes in at the same time. And the food tends to go in sort of 15 to 20 minutes. It's a really nice community feel to the program. We also acknowledge that not everyone can access those two programs at that time, so we also have a program running out of the community centre Monday to Friday, 10 o'clock to 2:30, where people can come in to access fresh food from the centre. They come in, speak to a volunteer, it might be just about accessing fresh food, or they might sort of discover with a conversation.
If I was an elderly lady and I was embarrassed,
yep.
Could I ask somebody to say, look, would you mind just picking out some vegetables for me? I'm just on my own. I'll leave it up to you. Would you mind doing it for me? And perhaps I could pick it up at the back door or something. Is that possible?
Well, what we do, we encourage everyone to access food and invite everyone in. It's a very friendly, welcoming environment.
Yeah, yeah.
Non-judgmental. We do occasionally get people who perhaps might be on a walking stick or a walking frame. So our volunteers do a wonderful job in sort of identifying that member of the community might need a bit of assistance getting around to access some of the food and might just have a little conversation about, would you like me to grab some apples from that corner because you may not get there in time to get them. So we're all welcoming program. And we do our best to support everyone who comes through the door.
And it's not a free-for-all, then? I mean, people don't sort of attack the tables or anything?
No, not at all. We sort of, at Dramana, we get about 40 or 50 people come through the doors. We've got 6 to 8 tables laid out, so that sort of provides adequate space for people to come through. And we try to distribute each type of fruit or vegetable on each table, so it doesn't create a kind of, races, you say, to get to different food types. Rosebud's a bit of a more robust program where we can get between 100 and 150 people coming through doors.
Do you get people that return continuously, or do you find that it's people that they use it as an emergency?
Both, yeah. So we do get people who come on a regular basis. And we're quite happy to see that because it means that they feel supported, comfortable and involved in the environment. And we also do get people that we might see only once or twice. We might see once every 6 months. And that sort of, again, just highlights that food security insecurity can be an issue, an ongoing issue for someone, or could just be caused by a one-off event where might be a huge medical bill comes in and someone just struggles to find that extra money for a... food for a week or two. So, we do see people coming on a regular basis, but also, just once off occasionally too.
Well, thank you, Mark, for joining us today. Now, it's the Fresh Food Program, and it's running from the Southern Peninsula Community and Information Support Centre. So we really appreciate your efforts in undertaking this very important role in the community. I think it's fantastic, and raising the awareness of food insecurity. We're learning more about the important issues impacting many of our residents here on the peninsula, and sometimes they don't get the media attention that they probably deserve. So we really appreciate not only the great work you're doing, but also that you've taken the time out to enlighten us this afternoon.
And, well, thanks very much.
And so thank you very much.
Yeah, and thanks for your interest in our program, and also and your support of the community on the peninsula.
Well, you're welcome, Mark, and we'll talk to you again in not too distant future,
and see how it's all going.
And if you've got any changes down there that you want to announce, then please let us know so that we can pass it on.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Mark. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
You're with the Age Stage, and our next guest is a gentleman by the name of Malcolm Daff, who is exploring ways that seniors here on the peninsula can have a voice, not only about issues on the peninsula, but also wider issues. Malcolm, welcome along.
It's a pleasure. Good to be with you on a very hot afternoon.
It is a very warm.
It's a bit heated out there, isn't it?
Now, what is Peninsula Voice, and what's the focus of this group?
Well, it started off as an initiative of four churches in Mornington, and it's developed from there. We're all volunteers, and the main purpose of us is to promote a feeling of compassion in the community for those who are doing it tough.
Right.
And what we do is basically run face-to-face public meetings. We've done about 11 in the past 3 years, and those have been mainly in Mornington, but also we did a major one in Frankston concerned the drug ice.
Oh, okay. And so they're informational sessions, or what do these events entail?
They're really two-pronged. The main thing we want to do is to change the hearts of the people and to make them or help them be more compassionate. The other side is actually giving in real information about these social issues that we deal with. And for that, we really need experts and people who really know what they're talking about. We don't pretend to be experts in any of the social issues we deal with. We just really help people to be introduced to experts who will help them understand the issues.
And so what are some of the issues that you have discussed? You just mentioned the issue of ice that you held an event for, but what are some of the other issues that are raised and that you then gain some expert advice to assist in empowering and enlightening the community?
Family violence is the big one we started off with Rosie Batty and other people who have been personally affected. We've had interviews with people who have really survived some really difficult experiences. We've had interviews with refugees, people who have survived trauma. Our very first forum was a lady who survived the Ash Wednesday fires, and more recently Hugh McKay came down and did a commentary on how he saw Australian society and where we're heading.
Hugh McKay is very interesting to hear speak. I'm sure you would have got a large crowd to that. But what sort of audience do you attract? Is it? I take it it's across the board of the community then?
It's across the board. All our events are free. Hugh McKay, we've got about 160 people, and that was a smaller one for the family violence and ICE seminars or forums. We've got upwards of 500 people.
Oh, goodness.
So it must be a sizable venue that you hold these events at, surely?
Yes. The main venue that we've been used for the large events has been the Peninsula Community Theatre in Wilson's Road in Mornington, and that can hold about 400 or just above 400.
It's right next door to us.
Yes.
It is about 50 metres from where you're speaking right now. And also gone to the New Peninsula Auditorium, to one of the major churches in Frankston, which could accommodate about 350 people for a forum. So, yes, we tend to go to different venues across the peninsula.
What sort of format is it? Is it a bit like television's Q&A? Is it?
It's a little bit different from Q&A, although most of our forums do have an opportunity for people to give questions to the experts, but tends to be some mood music to set the scene, and a lot of the schools have been really, really generous in providing their bands for that sort of mood music, and then we go into experts to speak on the subject, and then a bit of Q&A, and we always really need to have somebody with a personal experience, somebody we can relate to, somebody who touches our heart, so to speak. People have had personal experience in these sorts of trauma.
Do you record these events?
Yes. We have video recording, which we basically use just among ourselves to see how we can improve.
Right.
We do take lots of photos, which often end up in the local paper.
Yep.
And with stories alongside them, so that helps to extend our coverage a little bit.
Because I would have thought that to get all those 500 people together, that's a big effort. To get the experts together takes time, and to get an individual person who is the focus for the issue that's being covered, that takes effort. To be able to record that and then to be able to keep that on your web page for people to use as future reference, I would have thought would have been invaluable.
Yeah, we have got some video footage of some of the sessions we've had, and it really extends the coverage of what we're saying and what we're doing.
Well, I think there should be some opportunity for some... Is this an evening thing, usually?
Usually evening, not always evening, usually early evening. And most of the people who come tend to be middle-aged or older.
We need to. I think we really need to find a way that we can actually get this recorded by some of our experts, so that we have a professional recording of this and we can use it. Mm. You know, use it on the radio.
Because it sounds like amazing information.
You'd be more than welcome. Deborah Maher's done some recording for us in the past and broadcast it, which is very, very helpful for us because there's not everybody who can get out to a public meeting and hear the experts in person.
And how does someone find out about Peninsula Voice and what its next event or topic may be, Malcolm?
We've got a web page, which is, if you search under Peninsula Voice,
right,
you'll find us. We've also got a Facebook page, so you'll find us there as well. And we've also got email addresses on those pages and telephone numbers of myself and other people.
Right, yeah. If people search for you online is usually the best way to find you. Do you have an event coming up, Malcolm?
Yes, we have a major event at the Peninsula Community Theatre, not tomorrow, but the following Wednesday night. And the topic is mental health of young people. And we've got Professor McGorry presenting as the main speaker, but also got Peter Dawson, who's a local person who works with Headspace.
Right. And can people just turn up for that, or do they need to pre-book a ticket or something?
No, we've got a registration system on Eventbrite, and if you search Google, you'll probably come up with Eventbrite with the event on it.
Right.
So if you put your contact details down there, we'll be able to contact you about future events as well.
Fantastic.
Is it free, though?
It is free.
All right. Excellent. All right. Well, how many people are you expecting at your next event? Do you know what your numbers are?
We're expecting, there's not everybody who registers, of course, actually turns up on the night, but we're expecting very close to a full house at the Peninsula Community Theatre. probably 400 or so next Wednesday night.
Well done you.
Yes.
That's a lot of people good. To get together for, you know, and the interesting thing for me in any case is you end up with a dynamic in the room.
Yes.
If you've got a room of 30 people, it's sort of a bit of a chat. But if you've got 400 people in a room, then there's a very palpable sense of interest, urgency, knowledge, desire, and all those things, which add very much to the occasion in my thinking.
That sounds like a very interesting night.
A good insight, because what we're really on about is developing relationships within the community so people make relationships which they continue outside the event, which therefore builds up what we call social capital.
Yes.
Makes the community stronger.
Oh, very good. Well, thank you, Malcolm, for taking the time of talking to us today about Peninsula Voice, and we're sure you'll get a big crowd there next week. It sounds very interesting, actually. Even I might be registering for that one. But
yes.
Hopefully we can talk to you again in the future, Malcolm, and see what's coming up as well.
Yes, it's a pleasure. The thing that we really aim for is people who are supporting people who are doing it tough.
Yes.
We don't normally get people who are the subject of abuse or whatever, or trauma, but it's those people around them, their neighbours, their family, they're the people we really aim for.
Excellent. Yes. All right, lovely to talk with you, and we'll hope to be able to catch up soon and maybe get involved in doing some more recording.
Yes.
Good. Thank you, Brody.
You're
Thank
very
you,
welcome.
Thank you, Malcolm.
Bye.
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 We've got a little typewriter music, how's that?
I feel like my fingers should be like tapping away. So next week, we start a new sort of season talking about services for seniors. So we'll actually be looking into safety for seniors and have a member of the Victorian Police Force joining us. So you will be on your best behaviour, Brody. We'll possibly have a guest from the Shire, maybe even the CEO, if we could nail him down to a phone call. But just for an update on what plans are for the Shire. And the panel will be back. And we also wanted to mention that our wonderful producer, Lisa Gray, she is running a workshop coming up about what does it take to grow a boy into a healthy young man, and that has a panel of experts from the AFL, the police, Melbourne Grammar, as well as various men's groups, and it'll be at the Safety Beach Sailing Club on Marine Parade, Safety Beach, 20th of March from 7 a.m. to 8:30, so before work. So look into that, thegoodblokesguide.com.au.
Well, sounds like a full week.
It is a full week. Always is. See you next week.
Bye.